So the talk will be about an attempt to describe the high temperature phase of QCD in terms of weakly interacting degrees of freedom, which I will refer to as quasi-particles. I mean, the concept of quasi-particle is an old one in many areas of physics. Goes back, I guess, to Landau-Fermi liquid theory for liquid helium-3. And this is a concept which is useful both to describe dynamical properties and also, and this is a point which I would like to emphasize in the talk, also to describe the static properties. If we know the spectrum of this quasi-particle excitation, in fact, we can say quite a lot about the thermodynamics of the system. Now, this transparency is a set of remarks, of points, which I would like to convey to you during the talk. So the next point I will insist on is the fact that the thermodynamics of the coagulon plasma is dominated by hard degrees of freedom. Namely, it is dominated by quasi-particle, as you will see, which have typical momenta of the order of the temperature. And the rest of the modes are expected to be, on physical round, and we shall verify that this is indeed true a posteriori, are expected to give a smaller contribution. Now, I could have given, as a subtitle to my talk, we'll come back to that. Yes. Oh, not. I don't mean at TC. I mean yes. I mean, what I will be talking about, as you will see in a moment, are temperature which are typically two or three times above TC, and from that point onward to higher temperature, this description seems to be a relevant one. Among all the thermodynamics, I will be concentrating today on the calculation of thermodynamic properties. And I would like to argue that entropy is actually the easiest of the thermodynamic function one can calculate. You will see that by calculating the entropy directly, one gets almost for free a series of shortcuts which avoid a lot of the complication which you will face if you were to calculate the pressure of the entropy density directly. And I'll try to explain why this is so in the talk. And now, the main message which I would like to convey to you is that, indeed, we have a first principle calculation of the entropy using weak coupling techniques which give an excellent account of lattice data for temperature which are bigger than, let's say, three times the critical temperature. Now, I put first principle in quotation marks because there are a few holes in the calculation which need to be filled, but these are, I mean, I consider this as just a technical improvement. I don't expect that these improvements will change qualitatively or even quantitatively the general picture. So this is a report on work which I've been doing, which is ongoing work done in collaboration with Tony Reban and Ed Moyancu at Sackling. Tony Reban is at Technical University of Vienna. So let me show you a couple of pictures that you have probably most of you seen already. This is the typical, I mean, this is a typical result of thermodynamic function for the coagulon plasma. Actually, this is not the coagulon, but only gluon plasma. This is pure gauge theory SU3, and this is a result of a calculation, a lattice calculation from the Bielefeld group of a series of function. You have the pressure, which is a full line here. The dotted line is the entropy density, and the dashed line here is the energy density. These are properly normalized by the appropriate powers of the temperature, which is T cube for the entropy density and T4 for the energy density and the pressure. And one of the first observations on which I will concentrate on is the fact that these thermodynamic functions do indeed approach the free gas limit that we expect. We expect all these functions, if the system is composed only of massless particle, to approach the blackbody type of behavior. But this approach, which is visible here, is a very slow one, and I will be concentrating on trying to explain the deviation here, which is of the order of 15%, between what is coming out from the lattice calculation and the free gas result. Now, one naive idea one could have is that since we are working at high temperature, and we want to understand what happens at high temperature, one would expect that the coupling constant is small. I mean, this is the whole underlying idea of the search for the coagulant plasma. But as you know, I mean, the coupling indeed decreases, the effective coupling indeed decreasing with increasing temperature, but that decrease is only logarithmic, and the coupling is never very, very, very small in this region here. In terms of the coupling constant, we are dealing with coupling constant which are over the 1. Aside from that, perturbation theory seems to be very, very badly behaved. Again, this is here a plot of results which we have shown in one form or another. Keio presented such a plot last week at the meeting. This is a systematic calculation which have been done over the years of the ratio between the pressure divided by the Stefan-Boltzmann value as a function of the coupling, and the expansion culminates in the determination of this coefficient here, C5 coefficient of the term of order G5. Now, what you can see on this plot, these diamonds here represent the result of the lattice calculation, and the various bands here represent a result of perturbation theory done according to this expansion here. So if you stop the expansion at second order, you get a reasonable agreement. I'll come back to that later. If you include third order, you overshoot the Stefan-Boltzmann value. The fourth order gets even worse. The fifth order brings you back in agreement with the data, but you see that the uncertainty here, the theoretical uncertainty, which is a measure of the effect of the scale parameter mu bar, which is sitting in this coefficient. Typically, mu bar is varied between pi times t to 4 pi times t, 2 pi times t being the basic Matsubara frequency. So you see that this uncertainty in the choice of the scale leads to very large uncertainty in the predicted result. Now, certainly, perturbation theory cannot be trusted in this region of temperature or coupling constant, and something else has to be done. One thing which you may notice already at this stage is that the perturbation expansion is not an expansion in powers of g squared, as you would have naively expected, but it contains a term of order g cubed. Now, the fact that you have a g cubed is actually the signal that something has been done which is not plain perturbation theory. In fact, there is a resummation being involved here, to which I'll come back in a moment. And it's part of the thing which is very badly done in this kind of scheme is that we do a resummation to extract the physics which is involved in this g cubed term, and somehow we just skip out of that calculation the contribution of order g cubed. Now, this is fine for the mathematics. I mean, this does justice to the mathematics. If g is very, very small, then this is certainly the correct term. This is a contribution, a genuine contribution of order g cubed. But now, if g is not too small, it's not a very clever idea to actually do that expansion of on this calculation. And I will come back on this. This is an important point. But perhaps this is, I don't want to anticipate too much at this level. But keep in mind that already, in order to get this kind of expansion, we do something we do something beyond a straight perturbation theory. Now, this is the bad news so far. At the same time, I would like to show you that we can get a reasonable understanding for the behavior of this thermodynamic function by simply assuming that the system consists of quasi-particle. with some temperature-dependent properties. And this was first attempted, I guess, by André Péchier and Lucas Confer and collaborators a few years ago. And they started by assuming a very simple parameterization for the energy spectrum for this quasi-particle. Assume that the system is composed of quasi-particle with momentum k and energy Ek squared related to k by this relation, where there is a mass parameter here, m squared, which is taken to be temperature dependent. And I'll say more about temperature dependent of such parameters later. Then these modes are occupied according to Bose statistics. I'm considering only a gluon gas for the moment. And then you write expression for the thermodynamical function, the pressure, the energy density, and the entropy density. Observe here that the entropy density is identical to the entropy density of a gas of massive particle with a mass which depends on the temperature. So this is a simple expression. And actually, this is the first illustration of the fact that the entropy is simpler than other thermodynamic function. For the other thermodynamic function, like the energy density or the pressure, it turns out to be important to include an extra contribution aside from the free gas value. And this contribution is necessary to get thermodynamic consistency, because you want the entropy density to be the derivative of the pressure with respect to temperature. This identity is trivially satisfied, but this one requires special condition on this function B of t, which you can determine from fitting to the lattice data. So let me show you what can be achieved in this way. And this is... I'm not going to tell you more about this B of t, except that... no. Well, unless you have a specific...
The pressure you could, in this quasi-particle gas, you could get just the pressure transfer by taking these quasi-particles. Now you get the correction you're saying.
Well, what I will be doing later is concentrating on the entropy. Here in this very simple model, the entropy turns out to be identical to that of a free gas. Now, you will see that in more sophisticated calculation, which I will come to later, we get something similar. And going from here to here is a non-trivial issue. Yeah.
This self-consistency condition, S is dpdt, and t contain d. So S becomes derivative of d.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. That is a general question, that a constant with zero comes to energy is not determined,
yeah,
even zero temperature, but the zero for the entropy is zero.
That's right. Yeah, but there are more to that. But this is certainly No. Well, you see this n depends on temperature. So this temperature here, but it depends also through Ek.
Edward's argument I would easily buy if you add a constant.
Yeah, but this constant has to depend on temperature.
It's a temperature-dependent function. Right?
Yeah, but the temperature dependence, what Edwards says, that the temperature dependence is determined by thermodynamic consistency up to a constant, which is temperature-independent. Yes, 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 yes. Okay. Well, let's see. I don't want to spend all my time. I just want to show you that it does work and extract from that a simple message that perhaps this concept of quasi-particle is worth pursuing and try to justify it on the basis of first principle calculation. Okay, so let me show you what some people can do with this type of fit. This is from a paper by Uri Hans and Peter Levine from 97. And what they've done is essentially take the model with some little refinements, which I don't want to go into, and achieve a rather remarkable feat of all. Well, actually, I don't have the entropy for this model. I don't know why they did not calculate it. But anyway, the agreement is rather good. This curve here is what you obtain if you ignore this B term in the fit. So certainly the presence of a B term improves a little bit. Yeah, I mean, that would vanish, indeed, yes, indeed. So you can, I mean, actually, I will come back perhaps at the end on the relation between the entropy and the pressure. Naively, you would expect that if you know the entropy as a function of temperature, you can easily integrate back to get the pressure or the energy density. But because of this anomalies, the trace of the energy momentum tensor, the running of the coupling, etc., it's not a trivial matter to do. Well, but epsilon minus 3p anyway is non-vanishing only in the vicinity of Tc. It's one at 2 Tc. It's almost negligible. It's an effect which is important near the critical point, and we certainly don't claim that we have an understanding of what's going on there. Yeah.
One sentence about this paper, it was very interesting. What mask this Uddeheim's paper?
Yes, this paper, yes.
They have a couple of other plots which are very convincing. What dependence of gluon mass on temperature they got? And it is rather high, it drops in about 400 degrees, staying constant till 3 Tc, and then rises like a thermal mass. So
physically, that is
very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, to summarize this discussion, we have this idea that at high temperature we should be able to use weak coupling in a way or another. I mean, we know that at very, very high temperature, at 10 to the 50 JeV, certainly the coupling is very small and we can calculate correction to the ideal gas. Now, when we decrease the temperature, the coupling grows, but it would be very unnatural to discover that the degrees of freedom change very, very strongly. And therefore, and besides, we have this quasi-particle picture that I just commented, which suggests that indeed we can accommodate the thermodynamics very, very simply with a couple of parameters related to quasi-particle properties. So what I will try to do for the rest of the talk is to justify this quasi-particle picture starting from the basics of QCD. Now, let me try, in one transparency, to summarize why there are difficulties with perturbation theory at finite temperature, and also what are a typical degrees of freedom which one should expect, at least in the regime where the coupling is small. So I'm going to, for this discussion here, assume that G is sufficiently small that we have a nice separation of scale that I am going to describe now. And what I want to do here is to get a criterion for when perturbation theory can be applicable. Now, in gauge theory, the interaction between particle motion and the gauge field is described by this covariant derivative here. And much of the discussion will be concerned about the relative magnitude of these two terms. You see, if this is big compared to that, then I can treat the interaction with the gauge field fluctuation as a small perturbation. And there are cases where this is indeed true. On the other hand, when these two terms become comparable, I cannot use perturbation theory anymore. And observe that if I multiply these two terms by A, these two terms will be just the two components of the stress of the field strengths, F mu nu. And when the two terms are comparable, this is equivalent to say that the nonlinear term in the QCD Lagrangian become essential. Now, how am I going to estimate this? I'm going to estimate the magnitude of the gauge field fluctuation here by just calculating the square of the fluctuation, the average of the square of the fluctuations. And that is given, if I keep only the thermal fluctuation, by this integral here of a three momentum k of a statistical factor n k divided by the energy of the fluctuation. Now, nk is given by this expression here. And for the hard degrees of freedom, which are those which dominate at high temperature, which have momenta k over the t, the corresponding value of this integral here is not hard to find. You see, this is d3k over essentially k. The epsilon k here is no mass, so this is k. So this integral is k dk up to a cutoff, which is determined by the temperature t. So that's essentially t squared. In this condition, if I take the square root here to get a measure of the magnitude of the gauge field, what I get is that g times a bar here is the square root of this. It's just dt, and g times t is a small number compared to k, because k is over the t, under the condition that g is a small number. So for the hard particle, indeed, perturbation theory should be applicable, because the correction coming from the coupling of the hard particle to the gauge field fluctuation represents only a small perturbation compared to the kinetic energy of the particle. Now, let's move to another regime where I will be considering longer wavelengths excitation, that is to say, softer momenta. And let's stop at this particular scale here, which emerges actually naturally in this game, which is g times the temperature. If I repeat the same calculation of the fluctuation here for this type of momenta, namely introducing a cutoff on the momentum integral here at the value of the order gt, then what I find is the same integral as before, in which I can do a further simplification, because in the statistical factor, whenever epsilon is small compared to t, can be replaced simply by t over epsilon. We are entering a regime where the modes can be described in classical statistical terms, and therefore the occupation number is just t over the energy. Now, if I do that, you see that brings me a factor t over gt, and t over k. So this is the same integral as before, but now the cutoff, instead of being t, is gt. So I get a factor g in front here compared to here. And this integral of the fluctuation is over the gt squared. Now, what you see here is that if you calculate g a bar, this is g to the 3 half times t. That's still, to the extent that g can be considered as a small number, that is still a small quantity, which means that if you are interested in describing the contribution or the physics of this particular mode at this particular wavelengths, 1 over gt, then you can ignore the self-interaction of the modes. I mean, these nonlinear terms will be down by a power of the square root of g. Now, that doesn't imply that I can ignore all the fluctuation. And in particular, what is remarkable about this scale of gt is the fact that the contribution of the hard mode fluctuation at this particular scale is important. Observe that g times a bar coming from the hard mode is of order gt, that is to say of the same order as this contribution here. And that implies that if you want to calculate the properties of the mode at this particular wave number, then you have to incorporate in a non-perturbative fashion the effect of the hard thermal fluctuations. And this actually is the basis of the developments of hard thermal loops, which I will come later, the fact that you have to introduce, when you do perturbation theory with modes which have this particular soft momentum, you have to introduce consistently to all orders the effect of this hard thermal modes. Now, actually, for most of my talk, this is going to be the relevant degrees of freedom. And this interplay here, this particular structure, which is reminiscent of what happens in effective theories, that you can construct an effective theory at this particular scale by eliminating degrees of freedom at the higher scale, it is indeed what will be underlying the discussion that I will carry on later. But let me just for completeness, tell you what happens at a smaller scale, because this is a regime which is also interesting and which is a regime where perturbation theory completely breaks down. This is a regime where the momenta are very soft, of order g squared t. Then if you repeat the same calculation as I did here, but cutting off the wave number of the fluctuation at the momentum g squared t, what you find is that expectation value of g squared is just g squared t squared. You get the factor g squared compared to here, meaning that g times the average value of a is g squared t. And you see in this regime, the fluctuation, the coupling of the modes to the gauge field fluctuation of the same wave number is non-perturbative. And this is, at that point, you cannot do any more perturbative calculation. It doesn't make sense. Okay, this is in the contribution of these modes to the free energy as a typical order G6, where you know that perturbative calculation, if you try to estimate Feynman diagrams, you run into infrared difficulties. So what I will perhaps comment, and certainly Keio will ask questions about this sector here. This sector is one of the most difficult to evaluate, and there are techniques to do that Keio has described for us last week. My view is that the fact that it is hard to calculate doesn't mean it is important, and numerically to the thermodynamics. And I would like to concentrate on these two type of degrees of freedom, and show you that we can indeed go rather far without really needing what happens at the very soft scale. So let me rephrase quickly, in a different language, what I've just told you about fluctuation, and show you a set of Feynman diagrams, which is perhaps a language which is most familiar to most of you. But this is identical to the discussion which I just made. So if I want to calculate the free energy of the pressure in leading order, that would be given by the free energy or the pressure of a gas of massless particle with a Bose-Einstein distribution factor. So this is the ideal gas. I can go ahead and calculate the order g squared in perturbation theory, because at this order, this diagram is totally dominated by hard degrees of freedom, and the coupling of the gauge field anyway coming from the soft domain is something which is totally perturbative. So this diagram poses no difficulty, and it was actually calculated many years ago. And then we have other degrees of freedom, which I mentioned before, with typical wave number of order gt. Now, I am referring to that as collective excitation, in analogy with what happens in other physical systems. And why are these collective excitations? This is easy to see, that the typical wavelength here is of order 1 over gt. Now, if g is small, 1 over gt is a large number. It's a number which is very large compared to 1 over t. But 1 over t is a typical distance between the hard particle, because the density of hard modes is proportional to t cubed. So the typical distance between hard particles is of order 1 over t. That means that to make an excitation at this particular wavelength, you necessarily need to involve many hard particles. So in terms, if you want to think about these modes in terms of the plasma particle, the correct picture is that you have you are dealing with collective excitations. Now, technically, how does this occur? Remember that to calculate the property of these modes, we have to include the effect the coupling between these modes, which are represented by this red line here, these are the soft momenta, you have to include the coupling of these modes to the hard degrees of freedom, and these to all orders. And this leads to a so-called ring diagram summation, which is again something which is well known in other contexts of physics. And the point which I was making before, underlying all these hard terminal loop type of structures, is the fact that whenever the momentum here on this line is soft, the dominant contribution is coming from the hard modes, that's a contribution to the self-energy which is of order g squared t squared. And if you look at the effect of such a self-energy insertion in a propagator, let's say here, you see that it is comparable to the kinetic energy, and therefore this term have to be taken into account perturbatively to all orders. Now, the order g cubed of perturbation theory, the contribution of order g cubed to the pressure, or to all the thermodynamic function, is coming precisely from this resummation, which, after having done the work of calculating this sum, one extracts the value of the coefficient in weak coupling limit. That is to say, we just calculate this quantity. This is a complicated function of g, and we extract the value of the coefficient of the term of order g cubed, but there are also term of order g4 log g, g4, g5, in fact, an infinite series in powers of g. And one of the points I want to make, which is a very simple point, in fact, is that the whole function is actually completely smooth as a function of g. So it extrapolates rather smoothly to larger values of g, whereas the first term here gives this violent oscillation that you have observed in perturbation theory. So in fact, there is nothing very, very profound going on here, except for the fact that we have to calculate the contribution of the soft modes properly. Let me rephrase that again in another language, which is perhaps more physical, which is to show you the spectrum of excitation that one expects when one properly takes into account this coupling between the soft mode and the hard degrees of freedom. This is essentially what you would calculate in the hard thermal loop approximation for the propagators. And these are just the dispersion relation of the modes for the gluons, say, as a function, the energy of the modes as a function of the wave number k. So in case you have no interaction, of course, the dispersion relation is a straight line, this blue line here, omega is equal to k. But as soon as you turn on the interaction, then you have a rather profound modification of the spectrum at low momentum. You have this phenomenon which is analogous to the plasma waves in ordinary plasma or in the electron gas. And you get a splitting. Here you have the two transverse modes, which corresponds to the normal gluons, the transverse propagating modes, and you have a longitudinal mode, which is displayed here in green, which represents the analog of the charge oscillation in a plasma. Now, this information we know and we have under good control, and we want to make use of that in order to say something about the thermodynamics. I will make a few comments later about dimensional reduction, which address the problem from a totally different perspective, but this information in dimensional reduction is totally left out. Here we want to build on that information, we want to exploit what we know about the spectrum to determine what should be the thermodynamic properties at high temperature. Now, what do we know about the spectrum? Well, we know what happens here, that in this region of momenta, which is of order GT, there is a strong modification of the spectrum compared to the free gas value. So this modification of the spectrum, the fact that quasiparticles don't have the free gas spectrum in this region, will certainly contribute to the thermodynamics. Now, observe that this is a contribution of modes which have small energy. This omega plasma here is of order GT, and which exists only in a rather limited phase space region. So the modes have low energy, and there are very few of them. So it's like calculating the contribution of a phonon to the specific heat of a metal. You don't expect that contribution to be overwhelming. I mean, the fact that we find an order G cube, which is big, and take you away from any reasonable estimate based on perturbative calculation, is a signal that this contribution is not properly calculated by this leading G cube term. Now, the other thing which we know about the spectrum is that at very large momenta, we still have a contribution which can be estimated from perturbation theory. There is a thermal mass here, or a so-called thermal mass, which makes for a slight correction here to the spectrum. Now, as you will see later, this whenever we calculate, we try to estimate the effect of this part of the spectrum on the thermodynamics, we have also to be consistent to estimate the effect of the coupling of this mode to the soft degrees of freedom, which are present in the plasma, in order to calculate a correction to the leading behavior to this asymptotic mass. And this will come in proper time. So the rest of the calculation, which I'm going to present in the last 20 minutes, is a bit of formalism which will allow me to exploit completely this information I have on the spectrum and get a result which I can compare to lattice data. Well, I am assuming that the dominant degrees of freedom in the region which dominates the thermodynamics is composed of actually two transverse gluons. There is a small region of phase space where I do have transverse gluons and longitudinal excitation corresponding to the plasma. And these modes contribute by themselves to the entropy. They count as independent degrees of freedom. But at the same time, they also modify a little bit the dispersion relation at high momenta, because the hard particle propagate in a background of soft mode. There are not many, but they bring a small correction. So I'm ignoring, indeed, the possibility that other degrees of freedom could be playing a role. But I don't see any need for that yet. Well, close to TC, there are certainly others, but...
Close to TC, there are these parameters.
Yeah.
There was a very characteristic mistake, by the way, done by others who said there are phonons.
Yes.
Small momenta, there are phonons. There is sound, the many anything.
Yes.
Should we include phonons in the degree of freedom when we calculate specific heat? The answer is no, because there should be
phonons. Okay.
The external mass is really there at momenta, say, 10 times.
Yeah, well, actually, you will see in actual QCD, this thermal mass is actually a momentum-dependent object. And when I was referring to little holes which have to be filled, is the fact that, I mean, it's one of them that we have. I mean, this quantity, which is momentum-dependent, actually occurs only in some average quantity, integral over momenta. And for this average, we have been able to find a remarkably simple approximation, which seems to work. But we would like to repeat the calculation with a full momentum dependence. But this is much harder and not very rewarding, so it's slow. Okay. We don't expect a big change, but just to be sure, we would like to do that. So let me briefly mention several attempts which have been made to deal with this problem, and then I'll present what we've done. One of the most direct and straightforward way to incorporate effect due to the renormalization of the quasi-particle propagation, in particular the fact that they have a mass, is simply to reorganize perturbation theory. We were discussing this yesterday, I guess, by adding a mass term to the free Lagrangian. This mass parameter here is a parameter which depends on the temperature, and subtract it. So you have the interacting Lagrangian is the original interaction term plus this term, which you may view as counter term, which are needed to avoid double counting. And if you do that, you can reorganize your perturbation theory by declaring that the new unperturbed Lagrangian is L0 prime, the sum of these two terms, which is as easy to deal with as the original Lagrangian, just a mass term added. And then you can go ahead. And indeed, what you find if you do that is that you get results which are much, much more stable. You can carry out perturbation expansion and push the domain where the apparent convergence of perturbation theory holds down to values of G, which are over the 1, which is the region where we are interested in. Now, there are difficulties with this scheme, difficulties connected to the fact that, you see, you introduce here, in your interaction term, a quantity which will play the role of a counter term, which is temperature dependent. And since you are going to do, I mean, eventually higher loop calculation, you will be faced with ultraviolet divergences, which will depend parametrically on the temperature. And even though we know that if you do an all-order calculation, this type of temperature-dependent ultraviolet divergences should go away, the systematics of that elimination is not at all transparent in this scheme. The same criticism applies actually to what has been called Hautemer loop perturbation theory, in a way, or slight extension of what Patrick was explaining yesterday. Namely, since we know everything about the propagators for the soft modes, this is a Hautemer loop Lagrangian, we can add and subtract the full Hautemer loop Lagrangian and reorganize perturbation theory in the way indicated here. Now again, this the same difficulty with ultraviolet and temperature-dependent infinities occur here. Besides, there are conceptual difficulty which again should disappear in an all-order calculation, which are connected to the fact that if we do loop calculations, and Eric Bratton and his collaborator are doing that at the moment, then you are led to use this effective Lagrangian in a region of momenta for which it is not justified. So this part of phase space where you are using the wrong Lagrangian in the calculation has to be compensated by a counter term. And again, the systematic of how this is achieved is not very transparent. Besides, the scheme is rather involved because this Hautemer loop Lagrangian is a non-local object with complicated vertices, and in practice this is very hard to implement. Now there is a totally orthogonal point of view which actually focuses not on this particular degrees of freedom, but focuses on the difficult sector where perturbation theory cannot be done. This sector of this gauge field fluctuation start to be interacting altogether, and nonlinear effect lead to a breakdown of perturbation theory. This is an approach which is being pushed by Keio and collaborators, in which one reorganize the perturbation theory in the following way. One concentrate on the sector in the Matsubara formalism where most of the infrared divergences are to be found, namely the sector with omega n equal to 0. And for that sector, one writes down an effective Lagrangian whose coefficient represent actually are calculated by the standard procedure of integration of all the modes which are excluded from the effective Lagrangian. So all the physics, all the thermodynamics, all the dominant degrees of freedom which play a role in the thermodynamics are actually included in the coefficient hidden in these parameters here and in delta L. And the rest is an effective three-dimensional theory which we cannot calculate perturbatively for the reason I mentioned before, but which can be treated on a lattice. Now, it's an interesting and still not fully understood the question of the relationship between an approach which is based on the actual excitation of the system in terms of quasi-particle, which represents really real-time excitation, and an approach based on this dimensional reduction, where essentially the only part of the spectral function which you consider is that at zero frequency. So it's totally an open, I mean, to me, an open question. I don't really see yet. Well, no, I mean, yes, you are. I mean, this is a bit provocative. Certainly, what is true is that these modes here are completely static. The information about the spectral weight is certainly buried somewhere in the coefficient. How this is done is something which I cannot. I mean, I cannot trace the correspondence between this and the scheme which I'm going to present now. So, having recognized that the problem we have to solve is a problem of somehow propagatory normalization, we want to express a thermodynamic function in terms of propagators and go ahead with the calculation. So I will be very brief on this. This is, I mean, for those of you who are interested, I can, of course, provide details. This is a rather old story in itself. I mean, these methods were invented in the early 60s in the context of many-body physics, that is non-relativistic field theory, if you wish. And the idea is that you can construct a functional free energy as a functional of the propagator, given by this expression here. Yes, I even wrote a book 15 years ago in which there is a chapter which contains an explicit derivation of that. No, I can derive it for you. It's not very hard, but it takes time. Yes. No, I gave an explicit derivation on the board, if I may say so, and it was on the transparencies last year in Schladming in a school. Yeah, but I can do that for you. Okay, but I have checked the derivation and I have derived it also from my colleagues. So I mean this is completely under control I learned these tricks from a distinguished colleague of mine, Cyrano de Dominicis, who is in our lab, and he has done a set of very fundamental paper on all these techniques in 64. That is long, long, long ago. Okay, but anyway, so this exists, this works. So you can, well, I don't have time to go into the derivation, but what you do is the key ingredient here is this functional phi, which represent the sum of all the diagrams which are two particle irreducible, namely, in other words, all diagrams in which you cannot isolate a self-energy insertion. So for the case of a scalar theory with phi cube and phi four interaction, these are the leading skeleton. Now, this phi is, of course, calculated in terms of the fully dressed propagator, so you have to be a little bit careful in, you have to know what you do when you deal with these things. But anyway, the important property is that this functional is stationary whenever the self-energy, which is used in the Dyson equation here, is related to phi by functional differentiation here. For example, if I have these two skeleton diagram in phi 4 and phi cube, the pi will be obtained by cutting one line here. This will give me this one. Or one line here, this gives me this contribution to the polarization tensor. Now, why is this important? And this is part of the reason why the entropy is much simpler. If you take the derivative of the temperature of the free energy with respect to temperature in order to get the entropy, what you get is two contribution. You get an explicit contribution coming from the fact that all this trace operation here will involve statistical factors which are explicitly temperature dependent. And you get a contribution coming from the fact that the propagator itself is temperature dependent. Now, because the free energy is stationary here. When you take the derivative with respect to t, what you have to do is to take a derivative with respect to d at fixed propagator. So you don't have to worry about thermal masses sitting in propagators and things like that. You know that once you are done, this type of contribution should eventually vanish. Now, there is another simplification which is more restricted, but which is very important for our purpose. Let me skip most of this. I can briefly, I mean, most of you are familiar with the techniques of integrating over a contour and going into the Matsubara formalism and replacing some of the Matsubara frequencies by integral over frequencies, which involve a statistical factor here. So this is what I was saying before. This statistical factor depends explicitly on temperature. Beta is 1 over T. And there is also temperature dependence in D. Now, the other simplification which occurs is that this is a result which you get for the entropy, where there is an extra contribution here, S prime, which involves the derivative of this function, this two-particle irreducible skeleton. And, well, it's something which you cannot, I cannot give you intuition for what it is in a second. But for two-loop skeleton, the important properties, actually, this is a property which goes beyond two-loop, but for certain topology of diagrams. What we can prove is that S prime is equal to zero. Now, I cannot explain to you why, I mean, what's the meaning of this cancellation on this expression, but let's look at the result which you have if you keep into account only two-loop skeleton in the expression of the free energy. To make that a little bit more concrete, although let me show you quickly the diagrams which I have in mind in the case of QCD. So these are typically the diagram which will contribute to the phi functional, the gluons, ghost terms eventually, and contribution of quark loops. And if you keep these diagrams into account, where all the propagators now are supposed to be fully dressed propagators, then you end up with a very simple expression for the entropy. And this expression is essentially, even though it's correct to order two loop, it's essentially a one loop entropy. You see, there is one momentum integration. And what it means physically is that in this particular context, I mean, the same simplification which we observed before, I mean, the cancellation of this B term for the entropy is actually going on here. You have an expression for the entropy which is just one loop type, which means that we do have hidden there a picture of quasiparticle. We are just summing the contribution of individual quasiparticle. Now, there are a few other nice features of this expression. Observe here that the integration involves a derivative of the statistical factor. So this integral here is manifestly ultraviolet finite. You can worry about z factor here to make this object finite. But this, remember that pi and d are multiplied by, one is multiplied by z, the other is multiplied by one of z. So this term cancel out, and the z is real, so there's no contribution of this factor in the in this expression. So indeed, this is something which looks like a miracle, and which is part of the reason why the connection between entropy and pressure is more complicated, that this cancellation of the ultraviolet occurred here, there's no doubt, but how it does explicitly occur if you were to write the free energy completely and work out the cancellation is not something which we fully understand. That's also one of the little holes that I would like to fill. Okay. The other...
because if you look at the temperature differentiation of the free energy, you get, of course, independent of the ultraviolet modes, just change the temperature. It's very similar to...
The exact normalization group equation. Yeah, there might be something like that, but you see, it's not, I mean, Yeah, something like that should occur. But it's not trivial, because you see, you have, I mean, these two terms are a priori ultraviolet divergent. And they are not, and these divergences are not, I mean, at least in simple model, which we can check, they are not simply eliminated by taking a derivative with respect to temperature. So it's we have to work a little bit harder, and this work is not completely done. But the expression for the entropy is completely safe. You can derive it by assuming you have a cutoff, and you see that the cutoff dependence disappears. Okay.
It should be like that, because just lower.
Oh, if you calculate the physical entropy correctly, it should be finite. Yes.
Just lower the temperature a little bit. There should be no contribution to the difference between two temperatures from the high ultraviolet. I mean, it should be the modes around the temperature that are relevant, not.
Yeah, this is what the physical intuition should. I mean, I'm happy with this formula. My physical intuition is totally satisfied. I'm not worried. But to prove it in detail, what I'm saying is not a straightforward exercise. Yeah. Okay. Well, in view of the time, maybe I just should show you the result. I'm sorry. Well, it is obvious from this expression here, because the statistical factor will drop at zero temperature. Occupation number is zero. Okay. So indeed, this formula tells you that at zero temperature you have zero entropy. It tells you that the dominant contribution of the modes are, as Christoph was pointing out, the modes which are in the region of momentum, which are of the order of the temperature. So all these things are there. Well, I have already commented a bit on the relation between the entropy and the pressure, so let me not digress on that. Let me tell you a few more of technicalities, because I don't want to leave you with the impression that everything is totally solved. But nevertheless, we have a path, a consistent path, to get to the result, modulo a few extra approximations. One of them, you will see, has to do with the fact that the scheme which we use is not in itself a gauge invariant scheme. I mean, in gauge theory, it is not correct to renormalize a propagator without worrying about vertex correction at the same time. Now, what we will be doing is actually, we will use a difficulty we have, which is our inability at present to solve a self-consistent equation, which I did not really emphasize. This equation here is a nonlinear equation, because the propagator here is given in terms of a self-energy which depends itself on this same propagator. You may call that a gap equation, or yeah, okay. So this equation, in the case of QCD, we are not completely able to solve, but we want to argue that anyway, perhaps it's best not to solve it completely, and drop terms, and make sure that we have a complete solution which is valid only up to leading order in perturbation expansion. And I will explain to you why we do that. And once we have this approximation for the self-energies, then we can calculate exactly the entropy. So essentially what we will be doing is, again, exploiting what we know about the self-energies responsible for the spectra of this excitation. We know that at soft momenta, the soft self-energy is well approximated by the hard thermal loops, because this is a dominant contribution. And we know also, I mean, this is coming from the analysis, which I did not have time to explain in detail. We know that at large momenta, only the region of phase space which is near the light cone is relevant. So we need to know the self-energy for hard momenta only in the vicinity of the light cone. And these are simplifications which are important. So we will be doing a series of two approximations, one which is very crude, in which we replace pi by the hard thermal loop approximation at all momenta. I mean, being aware of the fact that we are doing a mistake here, but nevertheless, this is a simple calculation to do. And that gives us a function which we call hard thermal loop entropy. And if you want to compare that function with the exact perturbative result, what we get is that we get the correct order g squared and a quarter of the order g cubed. Now, that calculation takes completely into account both the contribution of the hard degrees of freedom with the thermal mass and the contribution of the modes in the soft momentum region. What it doesn't take into account is a correction of the mass of the hard degrees of freedom coming from the coupling to the soft. And this is taken care of by the next approximation, in which we replace the hard self-energy by the hard thermal loop one plus a correction. And the correction typically involves the coupling of the hard mode with a soft dressed hard thermal loop propagator. And if we do that, we can verify, at least in the regime of very small coupling, that the result of perturbation theory match up to the order g cubed. So, I mean, we compare with perturbation theory just to have one place where we know that our approximation makes sense. I mean, if we were not able to describe correctly order g squared and g cubed, we would worry. And it's not a trivial matter, I mean, in this game. For example, the hard thermal loop perturbation theory to order one loop, which is already a very complicated calculation, misses the order g squared. It does get the order g cubed correctly, but misses the order g squared. So this is not, I mean, it's not a trivial, completely trivial matter. So let me now show you the result of what we get. This is a comparison between, again, the lattice data from the Bielefeld group, which are represented by this gray band here. The thickness of the band is a measure of the uncertainties on the lattice calculation. The full line here represent the result of the hard thermal loop approximation, in which I replace all self-energies by the hard thermal loop value and calculate the entropy completely with that. And the dashed line here represent the best approximation we have so far, that is including the correction of the to the thermal mass at hard momenta coming from the coupling to the soft node. You see, one thing is remarkable is that actually the agreement is quite satisfactory above temperature around 2.53 times Tc. But beyond that, there is another aspect of the calculation which is rewarding, is the fact that, you see, the deviation from one level of approximation to the next is actually a small correction, as you would expect. And if you remember, this difference here is due essentially to the fact that we have what is in perturbation theory considered as a G cubed term, which physically represent the effect of the soft degrees of freedom. And you see that these effects are, as expected, a small contribution. Now,
this epsilon minus the cube, but it's exactly at 2 Tc, so it means
Well, what you say exactly? I mean, on the lattice, this is in this region, yes. Yeah, yeah. We have plots of epsilon minus 3p, but since we don't calculate reliably in this region, I don't want to show that. So indeed, I mean, this is a place where, I mean, it's another argument of consistency that from there on, the quasi-particle picture is probably not too bad. I mean, I can just to give you another result, and then I'll stop. We can easily implement the same technology to include the quark degrees of freedom, and this is a calculation with two flavor of massless quarks, and compare with the more recent lattice calculation again from Bielefeld, and you see again that although both the calculation, the lattice, there are two things here. I mean, the lattice calculation is a little bit more uncertain. It doesn't go to very high temperature. But besides, here, this is a calculation of the pressure. So it shows you that once we have the entropy, we can, by integration, and assuming the value of the pressure, the boundary condition which we have chosen here is that the pressure at Tc is zero. Okay, so just a choice. I mean, it is an arbitrary choice. It's not too unreasonable. But you see that if we do that, you can also get a fair account of the pressure of the coagulant plasma. Yes. No. I mean, the scale is point. The zero. Yeah. No. Well, it has to do with the fact that the entropy doesn't change too much, and therefore, you see, the entropy density, when you approach TC, doesn't change too much. And if you force the pressure to go down to go to zero at TC, it has to vary rapidly. There is no other choice because it has to agree at high temperature. I mean, at high temperature, the pressure, entropy density, and energy density should be simply related. Yeah, but in this relation here, in extracting this, there is also a contribution related to this, what Dima was mentioning, the trace of the energy momentum tensor or the running of the coupling. And that is also taken into account in this integration here. Because the coupling runs with the temperature, right? And that gives a contribution to pressure, which is not... This one here in this region, yes. What is the? Oh, it's one because this quantity which we calculate goes to zero at high temperature. This is not immediately. It's not immediately visible on the expression I gave. Yes, but it goes to one asymptotically. Yeah, actually, but we haven't done that because we were interested in comparing with lattice results which were available at the time. I think one of the interesting comparison will be with chaos calculation at very, very large TC to see whether the behavior we have is compatible with his. That we haven't done. I mean, although it's a straightforward exercise, but it has not been done. A million GeV.
Yes,
yes. I haven't run at a million GeV.
Yeah.
You maybe I should. Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, I am done. So these are the conclusions. But I've already most of them. I think the important message is that there is a rational path towards this description of a coagulant plasma in terms of quasi-particle. I think this is important not only for I mean, it's not really important for the comparison with lattices. Is not, I mean, what to say? It's not really the number and the fact that we can reproduce lattices which is important. After all, the number we have from the lattice with a rather good accuracy. What is important, I guess, is the physical picture which is underlying the calculation, because that physical picture can be eventually exported to more complicated situation where dimensional reduction or other techniques or lattice techniques cannot be used. And I'm thinking evidently about non-equilibrium situation such as met in nuclear collision. There is no really, I mean, one feature of this type of approach which may leave some of you unhappy is the fact that there is no real small parameter which controls the expansion. And the real test of the method is to compare with exact result, that is with lattice. And I don't have any better justification to provide. The fact that it works is encouraging. But if you ask me what is the size of, what is the magnitude of the terms which we have been ignoring, that would involve the calculation of high order skeletons, and I'm not prepared to do that. I don't think it's worthwhile to do anyway, because that would spoil the simple physical picture, and this is what is most interesting there. And again, I mean, we can do more, and this is being done. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
architecture to hold also in real time.
Well,
heavy
iron is a very complicated game, but in principle, the notion of quasi-particle, I mean, it's a notion which is not limited to equilibrium. And actually, it was invented precisely to describe transport properties in system like liquid helium. I guess this is the first application which was made. So you can. The first application of quasi-particle was actually to write down kinetic equation for this quasi-particle and calculate transport coefficient. So this is a typical non-equilibrium situation. Now, how much of that can be done in the context of heavy ion collisions, that I don't know yet.
I'm just wondering what is really the actual temperature dependence of your masses. I mean, this information was indirectly contained in your dispersion relation, but you may just show us how they really go.
No, I don't have a plot of how they really go. I mean, in leading order, the mass go like
the
Debye mass, essentially, or something related to the Debye mass. So this is essentially linear in the temperature. Now, once we include the corrections, this is a bit more subtle. The temperature dependence is not very is not going to be changed, because it's a matter of dimension. So there is a temperature times a function of g. This is probably what you're worried about, because the mass is some function of the coupling times the temperature. Okay, so the temperature dependence is linear, but the momentum dependence, at leading order there is no momentum dependence, but at next to leading order we have to calculate diagrams, which I guess I have one here. For example, we have to calculate this type of contribution here, where this is a hard particle for which we want to evaluate the mass. So in leading order, this will be just a one-loop correction, which I haven't drawn here. But the next leading order involves the coupling between the hard mode and the soft collective excitation. Now, this diagram here is something which is momentum dependent. Okay. Now, as I said before, this contribution, when you calculate the entropy, this contribution here enters only in an integrated way, as an integral over momenta. So what we need is some average for that. And that we can fix by, that we have fixed this average by consistency relation using some rules and thermodynamics identity in order to be able to do something without going through the calculation of that. The other thing which I haven't told you is that I said we do not solve completely the self-consistent or the gap equation, as Edward wants to name it. But we do something equivalent, because this correction, formally, if we stop at order g cube, is of order g cube. And if we let g go, this correction will be overwhelming over the leading order correction. So this correction is plugged into the self-consistent equation. And this average value is determined by a nonlinear equation. So there are a series of little tricks like this.
Well,
I'm not sure there is an effective action which you can use blindly for all physical processes you want to evaluate. But in a way, underlying this picture, there is an effective action. It's hidden. It's hidden for the following reason. It's hidden because, you see, if you want to calculate the thermodynamics, you have two contributions coming from two different degrees of freedom. So you have the hard degrees of freedom and the soft one. So the soft, the effective action for the soft degrees of freedom is not enough to calculate the thermodynamical property. So there is no, I mean, I don't know what you have in mind by effective action. There is a quasi-particle picture for which you can write kinetic equation valid in some kinematical domain. That can be done. If you concentrate, for example, I mean, a good application will be the calculation of photon production rate in terms of this quasi-particle. Okay, certainly we can write a kinetic equation which should give that in terms of this quasi-particle. But we have to take into account the fact that depending on the quantity which you calculate, there are corrections, and this correction may be important. For example, this correction of on the hard particle degrees of freedom are of the same order of magnitude as the contribution of the soft mode themselves to the entropy. And this kind of interplay between the two types of degrees of freedom is not something you can easily accommodate in a universal effective action.
Some of them were discussed already by other people. I just repeat to make connection. So one issue is the shape of quasi-particle, the field inside it, and the other is the lifetime and damping. So by shape, I mean the following. If you have momentum equals zero and we have a quark sitting, we understand what is quasi-particle. It's a particle and it's the bicloud and the total charge is zero and the field is confined in some region, etc. If we start moving, we don't quite understand what it is. And Larry Yasser, for example, was considering, and also Bayer-Schrieff and company, very high momentum particle with moves through matter, and its shape is very complicated because it is scattering all the time. And all its components are scattering all the time, but they still have some shape, which determined from some complicated equation, and mm-hmm. that shape determines mm-hmm. the field is radiated, so if you want to know. So this is one thing. The other thing is this lifetime. In some sense, somewhere, the idea of quasi-particles, you understand it from Landau, et cetera, has some pool with very small shift in imaginary direction should break down. And in particular with this Landau-Pomerantzuk effect and what people include for, so they take one particle, put in the plasma, which moves with high momentum, and find that energy loss is not proportional to length, but so this is non-exponential decay in terms of the paper, etc. That the whole the shape of this particle, the loss, and everything depends on how long it was already in the plasma. So that's certainly not a quasi-particle.
Yeah, but all these little decoration which you are referring to, and actually this is also an answer to Keio's question, is that this particular effect of damping, etc., they don't really play a role in this particular calculation of the entropy. Okay, but if you were, but for dynamical property in particular, the dileptone production or photon production, those effects which are not important for the entropy would be important. So there is no universal effective action.
Concerning the time evolution of quasi-particles, we have studied the time evolution of excitation with different wave numbers, different momenta, namely semi-soft, soft, semi-hard, and it turns out to be rather complicated. Namely, the time evolution depends not only on what is k, but on also which time scale you look. I don't know if because already Daniel Bolyanov to talk about that in the weeks, but take some time. But it can be worked out, so the time evolution of relaxation follows a power law or exponential law or exponential minus p of t, depends on which regime you look. So I don't know if there is effective action for quasi-particles, but still, what can be done we did with dynamic normalization group is to find what the time evolution of the modes and okay, so this is something that you can have the answer quantitatively. There is a complicated physics behind, even there are many more things to do.
But those damping effects, actually, this is also a well-known result from Landau, actually cancel out in the calculation of the entropy.
Yeah.
the quasi-particle renormalization factor drops, I mean, for the same reason I explained from the entropy. That's also another reason why entropy is simpler. Yeah. But for real-time processes, I fully agree. I fully agree. I fully agree. Yeah. Yeah.